Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
We know it's important to make a will, but did you know that you can even make a will as a video on your smartphone and have it stand up in court? It does seem unlikely, doesn't it? It's probably not advisable as your best option, of course. You're probably better off. I'll reword that. You are certainly better off going to a lawyer and having it written up properly and witnessed properly. But still, as you'll hear tonight, it's better to make one on your phone probably than not to make one at all. Anyway, we're talking wills and estates tonight with lawyer Phil McGowan from De Grits Lawyers. And Phil, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Thanks very much, Phil. Good to be here.
Great to have you with us as well. You better tell us about this particular case. How did this happen?
Well,
a person made a will on a smartphone?
That's right. He recorded a video on his smartphone and
saying, "Dear Mum, my wife's getting nothing."
Yep, something like that. Setting out what he wanted to happen to his estate when he passed away. Mm-hmm. He then subsequently died some years later. It was some years later. So it wasn't contemporaneous with his death, mm-hmm. and I think it was about 4 years from recollection, and his family members went through his computer and found a copy of that video on his computer because he had synced his smartphone with his computer. They actually couldn't get into the smartphone because they couldn't crack the password or the passcode on his smartphone, and so the case was about trying to establish that this copy document, which was the copy on the computer, was in fact a will that could be admitted to probate for the court's purposes.
How could it possibly be?
Well, under the legislation, a document can include an electronic document.
Doesn't a will have to have witnesses and be signed and all of that?
The best way for a will to be made is for it to be on paper, signed by the will maker, with two witnesses present at the same time who also sign the document. But the law has been created in Australia by the various state governments that a will can be a document that hasn't been witnessed, so long as the court can be satisfied that the document was the intended last will of the deceased person.
So it doesn't need to be witnessed?
It doesn't. Now, the problem with that, though, is that it's persuading a court that this unsigned document or unwitnessed document is, in fact, intended to be the last will.
Because, I mean, the whole point of witnesses is to stop grasping relatives from writing the will for you,
well,
isn't it?
Well, that's it, exactly. It's
oh, no, Your Honour, here's the will here. It gives everything to me, see?
I
know it's not witness, but that's what that's what Bill said he wanted to do.
Precisely. And so the court needs to be satisfied. It's a high hurdle that the court needs to be satisfied of, and that the applicant for that document that's unwitnessed to be proven to be regarded as will, they've got a high threshold to get over. That's why it's much better to have a written will signed and witnessed properly rather than relying upon, you know, a recording on an iPhone or even, you know, a document on a computer that says, these are my wishes. There's been, you know, another case recently as well where the court said no. It couldn't be satisfied that the document that was on the computer was in fact intended. It was referred to as a draft. It wasn't really clear that was intended to be the last will of the deceased person. And so, you know, whilst there's these odd cases that come through the court process from time to time, they cause a lot of cost and delay.
Still, I mean, it does raise interesting issues. I mean, in this era of modern technology, doesn't it? That if really you were, you know, ill and in bed and not able to get to solicitors and all that sort of thing, and time was the time was fast approaching, that you could speak into your phone and alter the will, I suppose, as well.
Well, that's right. You know, make a codicil to an existing will.
So I know my will gives everything to my wife, but actually I'd like to leave it to Flossie because she and I have been having a secret relationship for 20 years and that's what I'd like to do.
That could well be regarded as a valid will. And if Flossie found it and tried to make an application of the court, then there'd be a dispute between the beneficiaries and executor of the written document and what's on this iPhone.
I know my will leave everything to the kids, but one of those kids, Bert, has been particularly annoying in the last year and hasn't been to see me in hospital, so I don't want him to have anything.
Could well be.
So these things could be valid.
They could be valid. And the closer it is to the time of death, the greater expectation is that that document was intended to be the last will.
Gee, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the old view that a will was a solemn document on a piece of paper, stamped and witnessed at the solicitor's office. So this is not the case anymore.
It's not the case anymore. But as a lawyer, my advice to everyone listening
is to do that. Actually,
is to put it in writing and have it signed and witnessed properly, because then there's no doubt about what that document was intended to be. With these electronic documents, there's a level of proof that needs to be established, and that is, was it intended that this document, this recording, be the last valid will? Mm. And that's a threshold which a written document doesn't have to get over.
What about another case, Phil? I'm not trying to throw up a million weird and wonderful instances, but something that typically might happen is that you discuss with your family members what would like to happen. You don't actually speak into a phone and make a proper will, and you don't say, this is my last will, but you have extensive discussions with your family members about who gets what. And it's just that you never got round to making the actual will, but everyone is perfectly plain about what your instructions were. You never wrote anything down, but you did tell everyone that, Bill was getting the fishing boat and Jane was getting the house and the investment property was going to Mary, and everyone's okay with that. Is that a will?
It's not a will because it's not a document. So for there to be a valid will,
still got to be a document.
It still has to be a document.
Okay.
But there may have been promises made in that conversation, or
If everyone supplies, affidavit saying that this is what was said, they all agree.
Then it would simply be a family agreement that if there was no written will otherwise, then the rules of intestacy would apply, and it might be that the wife gets everything or the kids.
But that's the issue, see, because the wife's saying, no, it's all coming to me, thank you very much.
Well, then she'd be saying, well, that's the only written document that exists, that's a will. And the kids will be saying, well, we all agreed that this would be the other arrangement between us. They would not be successful, because if there is no document other than what the wife says, or they're under the rules of intestacy that she's to get it, then unless she would agree, she's going to be the beneficiary.
Under the rules of intestacy, they're the rules which operate when a person doesn't have a will.
Exactly, that's right.
Under the rules of intestacy, the wife would get.
Generally, the rule is that the wife gets the whole of the estate.
Or the husband.
The husband gets the whole of the estate to the exclusion of the children. Gets a little bit different when there's second marriages and children from other relationships and those sorts of things. Mm. But generally, it's a spouse takes precedence over the children.
Mm. David's on the line. Hi, David.
Hey, how you doing?
Not bad.
I've got a question about my mum's will. I'm a bit annoyed about it, actually, so I thought this is the perfect time. I've got someone I can talk to about it.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened is my mum went and did her will before she passed away. And on the paperwork, it said the will would cost, $280. Then you got your power of attorney and you also your enduring guardianship. So they're three separate documents that you have to do for a will. Is that true?
They're three separate documents. You don't need to do the power of attorney and the enduring guardianship document to have a valid will, but they're documents that often are made to be available in the event that your mum had lost capacity to make decisions before she died and someone needed to make decisions on her behalf. But the will is the only document which is necessary to deal with her estate after her death.
Yeah, but what's annoyed me now is the fact that this solicitor, because he didn't tell us that there's other charges on top of that. Once she passes away, he's hit me with this $4,500 bill that we didn't even know about. And if Mum had known about it, she would have gone, nah, I'm not doing this. I'll just put money in your accounts. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. And look, I expect probably that fee is maybe for getting a grant of probate of your mum's will.
All I had to pay at $780 to get for the probate, it's going through the process now. I had to give him
What's the bill for, David?
Well, for paperwork, for their services and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, hold on, why didn't you tell us this before we filled out this paperwork?
Is this a bill for drafting the documents and so on, is it?
Yeah, all that, yeah, yeah. They've hit us with a $65 storage fee. They've hit us with a $50 fee for postage. And I'm thinking, hold on, that can't be right. Like, that's a lot of money. And it was only 6 months ago that she did the will, and she passed away about 2 months ago.
Hmm. Who's the executive of the will, David?
That's me.
Right. Okay. Well, you get to make this. You should have probably been given a fee estimate or a client agreement or a cost disclosure document before that lawyer retained them and they started work on it. So. Look, I would perhaps have a chat to the Law Society in your local area, in the state, and see what they can advise you to do, because it's a little unusual that you weren't given a fee disclosure or cost estimate.
None of that, because I went in. The only time that my mum needed me to go to the room is when she actually said what the will was about, what she wanted in the will.
Sure.
Other than that, I was there all the time, and there was no paperwork shown to me about how much it was going to cost after my mum had passed away. That's the thing that really got me. I've only just got this bill now, $4,500. It's still in probate, and like, he's going to take that $4,500 out of that money, and it's only $100,000. It's not a lot of money, so he's taken $4,500 out of that, and I'm thinking, well, hold on, that's just not right.
I'd certainly have a chat to the Law Society, David, and see what their advice might be.
Yeah, all right, cool. Thank you very much for
that. Thanks, Dave. Good on you. Good luck with it. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Peter from Fremantle. G'day, Peter.
Hey, hello.
Hi, Peter.
I'm originally from the UK. All my family, I don't have wife or kids, so I'm the only one over here with my family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any friends who are sort of close enough friends who are financial or sort of legal knowledge for me to feel I could ask them to be a trustee or the trustee of my will. And everyone says, oh, don't use the public trustee, it costs a sort of a fortune. But I just wonder who should I have as the executor of my will? Can you make any suggestions on that?
Well, Peter, certainly the public trustee is one option that is available, and I think you should perhaps speak with some of their local officers to see what their fee costs might be to administer your estate.
They take a set percentage of the estate, don't they?
They often take a set percentage. These days, they're more and more moving towards a fee-for-service type arrangement. The other options, Peter, might well be that a solicitor who prepares the will might be an executor, perhaps a co-executor with one of your friends or one of the beneficiaries that you want under the terms of your will. But if you've got family back in the UK, you could still appoint them to be the executor of your will. It's better if it is someone who is in the country, because they can then meet with lawyers after you've passed away or deal with the institutions a lot more easily. But it's not impossible for an executor in the UK, for example, your parents or a sibling over there, to be appointed as the executor. They will then just have to engage a solicitor in WA or in Australia to deal with your estate after you've died.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All those options.
No worries. Thank you. I'm talking with Phil McGowan from De Groot's Lawyers, and we're talking about wills and estates and any issues that you might have. Peter in Perth is on the line. Hi, Peter.
Hello. Yeah, sounds like my issues are a lot smaller than a lot of other people, but that's good for me. I've got a ING account which I can balance my super life insurance whenever I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, you're just suggesting that the online super situation is not that good. So I'm a bit questionable about it. Yeah.
Certainly having online access to your accounts during your lifetime is fine. What the earlier the conversation was about, was about having a will that's really on a computer or something like that. But I think the important thing is, if you've got online accounts, that if you do have a will, then it's important for your executor to know that you've got those online accounts, because sometimes there's absolutely no record or paper trail that your executor can find after you've passed away. You transact everything online. There's no paper that's ever sent to your home. And so that when you do pass away, no one really has any idea that you may have that ING account. So it's
unless they have my access code to the computer.
Well, that's right. And so it might be better to have, with your will, perhaps a list of your accounts. I'm not talking about giving passwords or access like that, but simply so that your executor at least has an idea. You've got an ING account, you've got an ANZ online saver account, an NAB account, so that they can write to the institutions after you've died and say, look, Peter's passed away. Did he have any accounts? If so, what are the details and what do we need to call in those assets following his death? So have a document. Go back to printing something out with those details and put it with your will. Give a copy to your executor in a sealed envelope and say, look, if something happens to me, you know, here's where you need to start to deal with my estate.
Mm. Okay.
That's a fair call. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter. Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. We're talking with Phil McGowan from De Groots Lawyers about wills and estates. We also wanted to discuss tonight, Phil, a look at Indigenous people and how important it can be to make a will to ensure that cultural wishes are carried out. Are there different rules?
Well, there can be, and I suppose there's been a couple of recent cases where Indigenous people have passed away without making a will.
Mm.
And so there's no executor appointed, and there's been a dispute as to what's to happen to their body, where are they to be buried.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of Indigenous people have a preference to be buried on country.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be living in Sydney, but they could have come from Cherbourg or some other Indigenous community outside of Sydney. And there's a dispute as to what did that Indigenous person want for their body. If they have an executor, the executor named in the will has the responsibility of organising the funeral arrangements. That clears up one issue. You've got an identified person who the executor is. If there is no will, it can often be a dispute about who's the person entitled then to make that decision. Is it a de facto spouse? Is it a child? Is it a parent? And often that leads to a court dispute over who's got the right to make that decision. Secondly, it's about telling people what your wishes are, particularly if you are a member of the Indigenous community and you do have firm wishes about what is to happen to your body following your death. Tell family members, set it out in black and white, put it down in a document. Even if you haven't made a will, it could be, these are my funeral arrangements that I want, so that at least there's some evidence of the deceased person if it ever becomes a dispute. Because that can be fairly significant for members of the Indigenous community.
Sure. All right. Worth noting. Scott from Nowra. Hello, Scott.
Yes, good evening. How are you?
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, just my quick question. I'm the executor of my parents' estate, and there's three of us siblings. Now, my other brother has actually disappeared and has not surfaced in the last 30 years.
Right.
What's the situation if, for example, they pass away and I'm obviously being the executor of the will, going to distribute everything, but he suddenly turns up and expects a portion after 35, 40 years? What's the situation with that? Is there a way to handle it? Is it best that my parents do something now to adjust the will or so forth?
Well, certainly they need to make a decision whether they want to provide for him under the will or not. If they don't, that's understandable. If he's not been part of the family for 30-plus years, it's understandable that they might want to make no provision for him. My advice would be do what they want to do in their will, and you'll have to then deal with the consequences when they do pass away. If he's not, if he's not named in the will as a beneficiary, the only way that he can get a share of the estate is to make an application to the court, what's called a family provision claim, trying to persuade a court that he should get a share of his parents' estate. Mm.
What about, Phil, though, in this instance, is this the case, Scott, that in this instance, if the parents say, no, it's going equal shares, you know, and that's the case, but the brother's disappeared for 30 years and can't be found, what do you do?
Well, you have to try and search for him.
We've searched for him, can't be found. What do you do?
Then a couple of things that you could do. One is that you could make an application to the court for a declaration that he's deceased. And it may be that you've searched all of the records, done death notice searches throughout all of the states, contacted people. I mean, if he's gone missing, which can sometimes happen with people, and they're not heard of again, and it's unusual, you can apply to the court for what's essentially called a declaration of death, that the court says that this person has died. That's usually in cases where, you know, someone's gone down sailing off the coast and their body's never been found, or they've disappeared suddenly, unexpectedly. If they've just decided that they no longer want to be part of this family and have, you know, shut off any contact, but there's no suggestion that they've actually deceased, you might have to be, you know, doing the searches. Ultimately, you might have to hand over his share of the estate to the public trustee in your state and say, look, we can't find this beneficiary. Will you hold it on trust if and when that person does ever turn up?
Okay. All right. No worries at all. Thank you.
Good luck with it, Scott. I imagine Scott's issue is not the only time that happens, actually. A lot of families are like that.
Look, they are.
Some people just, you know, don't want to be part of it anymore and just, you can't contact them.
Can't contact them. They don't have any communication. They move away.
But you're saying the problem is if they front again.
and they're not in the will.
And the money's not there.
Yes.
You've got a problem.
You've got a problem. So you can't just ignore the fact that this person's been named in the will.
We spent the money.
We've spent it. The executor's got an obligation to set it aside and retain it or pass it on to a public trustee, for example, who will then look after it.
How painstaking do you have to be in the search?
Fairly painstaking.
Oh, dear.
You know, you need to be able to establish that you've done everything that's reasonable and possible in the circumstances to try and locate this person.
You don't have to go physically looking for them, do
no,
you?
No, not physically looking, but if you can try and access, and
official
it's becoming
records.
Harder these days, electoral rolls, those sorts of things, you do birth, deaths and marriages searches throughout all of the states. See whether there's, you know, any police inquiries that might be able to be made as to whether anyone's, you know, independently submitted some inquiry about their death or missing person record. As much as possible to try and see if there is any evidence that this person is deceased or is still alive.
Mm. Kevin from Geelong. Hi, Kevin.
Oh, good day there. Hello, how are you?
Well, thank you.
I've just got a quick one.
Yeah.
I'll have this quick. We've got I've got an older brother who lives up in Queensland, and he lives by himself, and you might say he's a bit of a hermit, but he has got a house, and he refuses to make a will. We've tried to talk him into, you know, getting a will organised, but he just refuses to do that. My concern is, would anything happen to the house? Like, if he doesn't make a will, and he has got, you know, say 21 and 22 nieces and nephews, what happens there? Does the government step in and if there's no will available?
If he dies without a will, then the intestacy rules would come into play. And what they are, Kevin, they're set rules that divide up his estate amongst his next of kin. So the first in line would be his parents, if they're still alive.
Oh, no, not at all.
Then brothers and sisters. Nieces and nephews are next in line. So it goes down the family tree.
Oh, so it's pretty simple then.
Yes. And so if he's got nieces and nephews alive or brothers and sisters, then they will take the estate. The government doesn't get a look in.
I see.
But it would be necessary for one of those family members to apply to the court in Queensland for a grant of letters of administration. So someone's got the authority to deal with that real estate, probably with a bank account that he may have, even if it's only got a little bit of money in it, they would need to be appointed by the court to be able to administer his estate and then divide it up according to the intestacy rules.
I say, now, who, you just said that to apply to the courts of...
The well, if your brother lives in Queensland and his house is in Queensland, then it would be the Queensland Supreme Court.
The Queensland Supreme Court. Okay, well, look, I think that's answered the question. Thank you very, very much.
And if he wants to contact the Queensland Supreme Court, he rings the registrar, does he?
Yep, that's right. And their website's got details about probate applications.
Yeah, if you look on the website, you can see how to contact them.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Hi there, Kev. Thank you.
Good on you, bye.
Bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Yes, family members who go missing or just don't put their heads up anymore. Harry is in Burnie. Hello, Harry.
Hi, how are you going?
Not bad.
Okay, so a friend of mine has two children whose other parent died about a year ago, interstate, and also was residing overseas at this time. One of the deceased brothers has, if not the executor, has become in charge of administering what happened. And there is also a widow and a child from a current relationship that have to be, I guess, shared out the estate, if that's the word. So the question being, the brother of the deceased has become somewhat difficult in being clear on what the two elder children will be provided. There's like an estate and there's also a gratuity from the company the deceased worked for. So, yeah, I just wonder what my friend, what direction she takes or who she needs to talk to.
Well, certainly the brother who's the executive or the administrator of the estate has got an obligation to provide information to the beneficiaries or, if they're children, then to the parents of the beneficiaries, outlining what their entitlement is under the terms of the will or under the intestacy laws if there is no will, and provide details of what the actual estate comprises. So, you know, what its value is, what those assets are, including the payment from the company as well. So if the brother's not, you know, doing the right thing or being difficult, then perhaps your friend, you know, needs to get a lawyer to write a letter to the brother to remind him of his obligations and try to get that information.
Yeah. And one other question that my friend had is when it came to the gratuity or however you phrase it from the company, if the company doesn't have specific protocols or whatever, how do you decide the company's wishes of how that would be divided?
Well, look, it's an odd, I suppose, scenario, Harry, for the company to be paying sort of an ex gratia payment. Is that what you're suggesting the company might be doing?
That's part of what is to be. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Look, I suppose if the company's got no legal obligation to make that payment and it's just doing it out of its own goodwill and because it, you know, it wants to provide some benefit based on the deceased employee's relationship with the company, it's really up to the company to make that decision to what it's going to provide. But certainly, perhaps the company secretary should be asked for confirmation as to what the payment arrangements are, how much it is, when it will be paid, how frequently it might be paid.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. Yeah. And on the previous call, you mentioned something about the granting of letters of administration when it's interstate. Can you explain that?
Well, when you have a will and it needs to be established as being the last valid will of the deceased, there's an application, it's really a formal filing of some documents in the court, which then issues a copy of the will with what it's called a grant of probate. So it's got a copy of the will with the court seal on it, and that's the authority to the world at large that the executor's got the right to deal with the assets of the estate. When there is no will, the court issues what's called letters of administration or a grant of letters of administration, and that is the authority of the administrator to go to the bank or to go to the titles office and to deal with the assets of the deceased person.
Oh, okay.
It's just a difference between the whether there's a will or not and the two phases.
All right. Thanks for all your info.
Okay, no worries. Thanks, Harry. David in St Kilda. Hi, David.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Not bad.
The question I have is that it's only just come to light. My grandmother passed away probably 15 years ago. Now, this land deed has come up, which actually my cousin has given me. And this deed has left a block of land which my grandmother owned to my brother and sister and myself. Now, this block of land has been sold from my uncle, and he was the executor of the will.
Okay.
Now, we didn't know about this until now.
And you never got any money from the sale proceeds, David?
Nope. No, not at all. It was left to us. My grandmother had left to us unbeknownst to us. Now, this land deed has come up, and in actual fact, my uncle has witnessed it, and he's the actual executor of the will. Now, when we confronted my uncle, he said he could do what he likes. He was the executor of the will.
Well, he may have certain rights to perhaps sell the real estate, but you as the beneficiaries should at least get the sale proceeds if he has gone and sold it without your knowledge. So I'd certainly be chasing him for the sale proceeds of that property if he has sold it and not distributed the money to you.
Well, the thing is that now they've built on this. So this is probably over 15-odd years ago.
Yeah.
So he sold this land.
Mm.
And like I said, it's only come to light. Mm. Is there something we can do, or just
so you've been
too
you've been ripped off? In other words,
we have. Yeah. But is there anything we can do about it?
Well,
just let it go.
No. Certainly, you can do something about it. You're not going to be entitled to what the value of the land is worth now. What you're entitled to is the sale proceeds of that land 15 years ago, and then your uncle as executor has an obligation then to ensure that those monies were invested so that when they were paid to you and your siblings, you get the investment return on those monies. So if he sold it for $1 million 15 years ago, at the very least you're going to be entitled to that. But you're certainly not going to be entitled to what it's worth today.
Okay. I can tell you that it was a beachfront property.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
No, well, I don't think you shouldn't let it rest. David, don't let it rest. You've got an absolute right there, and you should prosecute it.
That's right. So go and see a lawyer, David, and take the documentation that you've got that establishes all of this, and get some advice from your lawyer as to what you need to do.
So I hope we do have a leg to stand on, because he said it's too late. You can't do anything about it, and he said, I've got the right to do whatever I want. I was the executor of the will.
No. It's certainly a breach of trust by him as executor, and he's got a fiduciary obligation to you as beneficiaries to give effect to the terms of the will.
I mean, in plain terms, actually, Phil, it's against the law, what he did.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
Is there some form of charge he can be laid with him? Can he be charged with fraud or deception?
The police won't, in my view, sort of pursue criminal proceedings against him. They'll regard that as a civil matter, and you've got civil remedies in the court against him for his breach of trust as an executor. So that's a remedy that you need to pursue in the court process. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. Hopefully if he gets a letter from your lawyer demanding the money, he'll find it and pay it out to you.
You can sue him.
You can certainly sue him.
All right, okay.
Right, Dave.
Oh, well, thank you very much for that. That was quite helpful. I wasn't aware of that. I just thought I'd just let it go. And I thought, okay,
don't let it go.
Don't let it go. Been too long.
Don't let it go.
Well, thank you very much.
Right, Dave. Thank you. Bye-bye. Exactly. There's no statute of limitations, is there?
No, there
on wills and estates.
Not on wills and estates. There may be some trust breaches that have limitation periods.
Because it all happened 50 years ago,
it
doesn't make a difference, does it?
And if they've only found out now, I mean the issue of delay and laches and equity might intervene, but that's sort of a defence that the uncle will have to run. Yeah.
But if, for example, you know, one of your uncles left you something when you were a small child,
that's right,
and you didn't know anything about that,
yes,
but you've just subsequently discovered when you're 30 years old that he did, that you can certainly pursue it.
You certainly would do.
Yeah. Megan, hello.
How are you?
Not bad.
Behaving yourselves?
We are trying to, Megan.
Right. I have a situation where there's a brother that was the primary carer and also the executor of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a substantial amount of money that was unaccounted for. And then through a legal firm, there was a distribution. And it was the legal firm that my father, in his will, assigned. But somehow my brother got control of them.
What's the question you're asking here, Megan?
Well, what the hell went down there?
Well, if you're concerned, Megan, that your brother has not been honest and candid and has misappropriated funds from your mother's, from your father's estate, then he needs to be asked questions about what was in the estate. If he was acting under a power of attorney before your father passed away and was misusing funds as the attorney or in the primary carer role, he needs to account for those funds that should have formed part of your dad's estate.
So, all right, thank you. Now, where do I go to make that accountable?
Well, it's probably best if you perhaps contact your law society to get referred to a lawyer who might be able to assist you with that. Sometimes legal aid might assist with these sorts of inquiries, but I'd certainly start with the law society and get referred to a lawyer who might be able to assist you.
Okay. Good luck with it, Megan. Just some texts too, by the way. Why is there not a central place for depositing wills, says John? There isn't.
And there's been sort of a number of...
He says WA's got one. Is that right?
Look, most of the states have at least thought about it in the past, and certainly in New South Wales, you could deposit your will with the Supreme Court.
It's not binding, though, is it? I mean, it doesn't really matter.
And the difficulty is that it's another registry. People are concerned about privacy, and so the old rule that you've got to look after it yourself or give it to your lawyer or put it in a safe custody box in the bank, that seems to be the way that will probably continue to be.
John says, is there any time frame on the distribution of the estate? I mean, if the executor just drags the chain for years, can you get them to hurry up?
Look, the general rule is that an executor should administer and distribute an estate within 12 months following the date of death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that depends on the complexity of the estate and the assets that might be in it. Sometimes it needs a bit longer to be able to realise an asset and get the cash. There could be litigation involving the estate that can take a couple of years to get finalised. I certainly know of one that I'm involved in for a client. It's been running since 2009. It's still not finished. And there's been, you know, reasons for that, mainly litigation. But if the executor is just dragging the chain because they're not getting around to doing their job, then you can apply to the court for the executor to be removed because they're not acting in the interest of the beneficiaries. And someone else appointed to finalise the estate. Yeah. So if they are being negligent in their duties, then the court will intervene.
Michelle from Surface Paradise on the text line. Evening, wonderful discussion. My sisters persuaded our elderly mother to cut out her grandchildren if her children die before her. So if I die before my mum, my kids do not inherit my share. Instead, it goes to my sister, who's childless. It's a recent change, and I worry about my mum being influenced. I worry about other things that have been changed too. My sister also got some assets transferred to her name, like mum's car. What can I do or should I do?
Well, I think probably a couple of things. Perhaps Michelle should have a chat to her mother and just approach this in a very sensitive way to see whether the mother really does understand the consequences of those decisions. It's unusual for a child's children not to benefit if their parent predeceases. So I would have a chat to the mother and see what she really wants to do and whether she properly understands that, whether there's an opportunity to speak with the sister about those issues as well and raise the concern that Michelle has. That might be a possibility. If there's great concerns and there's no opportunity to resolve it, then Michelle might, you know, just keep records of the conversations and the discussions so that if it does become a dispute after the mum passes away, at least she's got some evidence that she's collated during the lifetime of a mum that might be relevant to dealing with the dispute after death.
Mm. Jamie here from the Gemfields. I just got a text saying I have an unclaimed inheritance. Is it a joke or what? It's just a text message. Should I contact it or should I have gotten a formal letter? Sounds like a scam, doesn't it?
It sounds like a scam, but, you know, sometimes the only way to contact people is via technology these days, whether it's, you know, Facebook posts or text messages.
Jamie, be very careful.
I would certainly be very careful. Be careful about clicking any links if it comes to you in an email or something like that. And
actually, that's a good point. Don't click any links.
That's right.
Because they don't need links to get hold of you.
No, exactly. So perhaps try and contact the caller or the person who sent the text. It's rare for it to come via a text message, but look, it could happen.
My texter says, can your expert explain, that's you, Phil, can your expert explain how to add a common tragedy clause to a will? The seaplane that crashed in Sydney with a very wealthy tourist and his adult family had included one in his will. And instead of his extended relatives inheriting, the common tragedy clause was triggered, and a charity inherited many millions. What's a common tragedy clause?
And the common tragedy clause is where all of the members of the immediate family, and in that case it was... All died in the same accident. So that wills should provide for that family catastrophe scenario, that if the husband and wife, for example, and the children and grandchildren in some cases all pass away in a common accident or have predeceased one another, then there's a gift over, a default beneficiary that's appointed under the terms of the will.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a charity, it could be another family member, it could be a friend, it could be a combination of any of those. But it's often the case, particularly when I have clients who are young couples with young children and their parents are, say, deceased, that I talk about what happens if you're all in a car accident together and you all pass away. Who's going to take the estate then? And they often don't think about that because, you know, they haven't thought about where it's to go in the event that all of them pass away together. And, you know, unfortunately, it can happen. The seaplane example was one of those.
An aeroplane, aeroplane tragedy. It's quite feasible, actually, isn't it?
It is. That's right. And particularly families mobile together, they're moving around the world together, it can happen. So I certainly recommend that there is, you know, a gift over to, whether it's a range of extended family members, friends, charities, combination of all of those.
Sure. Okay, Elizabeth, let's get back to some calls. Elizabeth from Logan in Queensland. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good evening to you.
Hi.
I'm just ringing to ask, is it legal if you buy a will from the post office and fill it out?
It certainly is, Elizabeth. You can make a will via one of those will kits. Generally, lawyers say, look, you need to be very careful about making a will with those will kits because often they are completed incorrectly and lawyers often have to try and fix up the mistakes after the person's died, and that costs a lot more than actually going and seeing a lawyer and getting it done right from the beginning. But so long as you follow the instructions carefully, it's signed and it's witnessed by two witnesses at the same time,
it's a perfectly valid
it should
will.
Be a perfectly valid will.
Yeah, well, it was stamped by a JP, and I had two legal witnesses. And I spoke to my son and daughter, sat them down, told them what I had, which what asked them which they would like I know I'm going.
What
do
you explain that you were giving everything to the cat's home? Did you, Elizabeth?
No, I don't think I'd do that. Not with my children. But they're both very agreeable children. I sat and talked to them for about an hour, and they kept saying, "Oh, you don't have to do." I said, "We need to talk about it because I'm very old. I'm getting very old. I'm not very well." And so they agreed amongst themselves what they would like and what they wouldn't like. And I also gave them instructions about my grandchildren, which I know they will do. And I made the will out and got a JP to sign it. I went right through it and she checked it for me too. And I've both given both a copy of it.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
It should be fine, Elizabeth.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
Good luck, Elizabeth. May you live a very long life, Elizabeth.
Oh, I haven't got very long. But another question. When I have gone and the will's there, what do they do with it?
Well, it depends what assets you own at the time of your death, whether it needs to get a grant of probate, whether it needs to be filed in the Supreme Court in Queensland, or whether the executors or executors named in the will just simply need to get certified copies of it and produce that to the bank to be able to get access to your bank accounts or to transfer your property. So someone should know where that original will is held. So that when you do pass away, that your executor can go and access it and then start to deal with it.
Well, that's my son. And I also put my daughter as an executor too, both of them.
Okay.
Is that all right?
That's fine. That's fine. It's probably good that you've got both
so
kids
all
as executors.
Is take that to the bank to get to my bank amount. When my house is sold, I just divide it.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, I'm so pleased about that. I was wondering if it was legal or not, because someone mentioned it a few months ago and said, oh, I wouldn't have done that. But I thought, well, I did. So I thought I'd check.
Good
Thank
on you,
you
Elizabeth.
Much.
Good on you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Best of luck too. Elizabeth from Logan. Isn't there a rule, says my texter, about a witness can't be a beneficiary?
Generally, it's preferable that a witness shouldn't be a beneficiary of the will.
Can they be?
They can be, but the law varies in different states. So the advice should be
best
beneficiary
not, best, not.
Best not to be. Mm-hmm. They can be in certain cases where the will maker knew that they were also a beneficiary and intended them to be a witness, notwithstanding that. So the general rule, though, is don't be a witness if you are a beneficiary.
Mm. Yep. Okay. The witness is just witnessing the fact that you've
signed it.
You've signed it. The witness doesn't have to know anything else about anything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they don't need to read your will. They don't need to be told what's in it. They simply need to be there when you sign it.
Just so that they can witness that you did sign it.
Exactly.
Sally from Blacktown. I've left my sister and cousins out of my will. Given I don't have any dependents, would they have any grounds to contest it? I've left my assets to my close friends.
The only basis for a sister or cousins to contest a will is if they were members of your household and financially dependent on you at some point.
So if they're not dependent, they really don't have a claim.
They don't have a claim.
So this is the difference, isn't it? The children often have claims.
That's right. And they, as of right, they can make a claim whether they were dependent or not. But with the more remoter relatives...
So brothers and sisters.
Brothers and sisters... don't fall within that category.
Sounds like you're all right then, Sally.
Yeah. So it's very, very rare for brothers and sisters to be financially dependent upon one another, and even rarer still for cousins to be dependent on one another financially.
Mm. Yes. Carol says, Hi, my husband and I have one son, and he has seven siblings, and I have one sister. We saw a lawyer about our will, and he said in the event of a common tragedy where we died with our son, we would have to split our estate 8 equal portions among the siblings. But I wanted to go 50% to my sister, which I can understand. And I was told we couldn't do that without setting up a testamentary trust or changing our mortgage from joint tenants. Surely it isn't that hard.
It's not that hard, no?
No.
certainly, your respective wills could well be... husband leaves everything to the wife and vice versa, everything to the one son. But if he's not alive, then it could be a 50-50 split between the two respective families.
And that's just a matter of wording the will that way.
It's a matter of wording the will. That's right.
Yeah. Okay, Carol, just go and see a solicitor and tell him what you want.
Exactly.
It's not that hard.
No, I think it's certainly not that hard.
Is Phil's advice. John says, Phil, why can't someone just dispose of the will and just say, oh, it was all left to them?
Look, that is possible, but if they dispose of the will, then they need to be entitled to get the estate on some basis. Now, that might be that if there is no will under the intestacy rules, that the first cab
that's,
off
that's,
the rank.
That's right. They can't, they can't just sell the house because they've got no right to sell the house.
No,
no documents with which they can sell the house.
That's right. But certainly there's been many cases where wills have appeared after someone's death and there's a dispute as to whether or not it's a valid will. It was actually prepared by the deceased, signed by the deceased before they left this mortal coil. So it's rare, but it does happen.
Hmm. Fascinating discussion. Look how time has flown on us, Phil. They're human stories, aren't they?
They are.
And that's why they are so fascinating too. Phil McGowan is a lawyer with De Groots Lawyers. He's a specialist in wills and estates, and he joins us occasionally to discuss these, as I say, very human problems as well. Phil, it's always great to have you in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Phil McGowan joining us. Thanks for all the texts and calls too. Tried to answer as many as we could. Hope you got some useful information from all of that.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.